Chicago years ago.
What, Edith? Huh?
He not only knows their plans. What? To take over? To wage jihad against the Cubs?
Well, I mean, they'd probably win.
He not only knows their plans, but has accurately been predicting events like the fall of Egypt to Islamists. I got a little language problem with that. Not that there's anything dirty. There's plenty stupid. Accurately been predicting events like the fall of Egypt to Islamists. In order for that prediction to have been accurate, wouldn't Egypt have to have fallen to Islamists? Because I've been following it all pretty closely, and, I don't see that Egypt's fallen to Islamists. Did I miss that tweet? In his 2008 book, oh dear, we're hustling 2008 books, which took him years to write, yeah, one letter at a time, he made the case that the Turkish Ottoman Empire that was dismantled in 1924 would attempt to rise again, just like Jesus. This has been the long-term goal of the Muslim Brotherhood ever since, he says. It's that he says part where it all falls apart, isn't it? Any and all states that fall into the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood will eventually be annexed into Turkey, which was the center of the Ottoman Empire. What happens next will be fascinating and Shobat... Fascinating? Will be imaginary. And Shobat has released a statement about these recent events. Oh, get the popcorn. This is going to be good. Me, I've got a hot cup of decaf tea. You got to slurp your tea so as to maximize the flavor, I'm told. I mean, come on. If Flush Flimball for $40 million a year can dredge up loogies behind the microphone on air, I can slurp my tea, right? You know, just checking. Egypt and the Future of the Middle East by Waleed Shobat. January 31st, 2011. With socialist revolutions, the rule is, take out a czar and you will get a Stalin. Really, that's the rule? That's not just what happened in Russia? I mean, it did happen in Russia. There was a Lenin in the middle, and two or three mini-revolutions after the czar was taken out. Keep in mind, says Waleed Shobat, no pronouncer. Keep in mind, says this right-wing moron, the fire of revolution that engulfs Egypt was ignited by socialists and later embraced by Islamists. Do tell, Wally. Wally, I don't think Dad's going to be real happy about you lying, said the beef. Ignited by socialists and embraced by Islamists? Italy. Well, Egypt's got a bigger problem than Mubarak even knew, because, I mean, there's a lot of people in the street, and if all of them was just closet Islamists and socialists, there's only one problem. They don't appear to be either. That's why they're carrying around signs that say, U.S. quit supporting Mubarak, we don't want to hate you. And they don't. You know, the median age in Egypt is 24. And as a consequence of that, I have a feeling that a lot of Egypt just wants enough to eat, a decent job, and maybe a pair of jeans. Kind of like Iran in that regard, but that's the only regard in which it's like Iran. Keep in mind the fire of revolution that engulfs Egypt was ignited by socialists and later embraced by Islamists. It is true that the Muslim Brotherhood was banned as an organization in 1954, but it's been tolerated and has forged alliances with legal and political groups in the last two decades. The liberal socialists, the WAFT, and other socialist labor parties have been allies. Of course, the U.S. policy led by... See, this is where you're. This is where it gets really fun. You ready? Come on. No, sit down. Get the popcorn. Get the silly putty out. The slinky. Whatever. Juggling balls. Of course, the U.S. policy, and I'm going to have to read this real slow to keep from just busting out laughing. Of course, the U.S. policy led by closet socialist President Obama. That mighty damn deep closet, seeing how we ain't got no socialist universal health care. I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, that's got to be a closet that runs about 90 miles deep for him to be a closet socialist in. And he's way, way back in the corner going, hello, for him to be a closet socialist, because the last I checked, socialists, closet and otherwise, don't extend tax cuts for the richest people in America at the expense of, you know, the workaday folks. Like President Obama, you know, did. The U.S. policy led by closet socialist President Obama has been to publicly support the Egyptian people. Is that what the policy has been? I've been watching a lot of the false equivalence appeals for calm on both sides. I have yet to hear anybody from Secretary of State Clinton to President Obama to anybody actually inside the government saying, well, you know, it's time for Hosni to head on out of town. Time to head for the big roundup in the, no. Haven't heard that at all. Obama wants rights of assembly. Waleed Shobat puts those in quotes. Rights of assembly and quote-unquote elections in Egypt. Whenever a right-winger writes about elections, does the right-winger put the word elections in quotes? If a right-winger, for instance, was writing about, say, the United States elections in the year 2000, would it say, quote, elections, unquote? Because if ever there was a quote-unquote election in recent memory, 2000 in the United States would certainly have to qualify. Americans need to realize that democratic elections in the Middle East have never resulted in Western-style freedom. The rule in any Muslim-majority nation is that democracy is used during the elections only, period. That's only dot, 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 and then the word period, followed by an exclamation point. My ninth grade English teacher would have a field day with that. But they're right-wingers. They're right-wingers. This is how they are. You know, atne ute aitbre, if you one what I ime. Yeah. But I digress. What did democratic elections in Muslim-majority nations do? Iran is now a theocracy. Lebanon is in a state of chaos. Palestine is still in a state of psychosis. Sudan is on the verge of splitting. And Turkey's democratic elections are slowly emerging as an axis that will eventually lead to an Islamist alliance against Israel and the West. Soon we'll also see North Africa, in the name of democracy, remove all their dictators so they can elect you-know-who. No, Waleed, I don't know who. Why don't you tell us, since you appear to imagine who? I mean, isn't the potential split in Sudan, isn't that a function of trying to create a nation where the Christians and animists can actually be safe and have their own country, and the Muslims can have theirs? And then there's, an Islamist alliance against Israel in the West. So, according to Waleed Shobat, who thinks he's a patriotic American, Turkey and Egypt could take down all of Europe and the United States with this reformed Ottoman Empire. I'm just saying, but anybody here know what the Ottoman Empire was referred to as in the 19th and early part of the 20th century? Raise your hands. Yeah, the sick man. It couldn't get anything done. And it couldn't get anything done for like 300 years. It wasn't exactly out there conquering a bunch of stuff. And see, there's, again, this kind of goes back to something I was saying last week. Contained within this drivelous screed are certain assumptions, one of which is that democracy is something that only happens and is only democracy if we define it to be so, as if we have some sort of patent ownership over it, like, you know, an inventor would. Of course, we don't do democracy in the United States. We talk about it a lot. We're kind of like 13-year-old boys talking about sex. 13-year-old boys talk about sex a lot and don't do it much, if at all. The same with the United States and democracy. There is practically no democracy whatsoever anywhere to be found in the United States. Now, you want to talk about the Republican representation? Sure, okay, got that. You want to talk about majority rule? Okay. But that's not the same as democracia. It's not. It's just not. And we don't have a right to define it, even though Waleed Shubat, who gives a damn, thinks he does. The most plausible outcome for Egypt's chaos is a future election, as demanded by world opinion, the outcome of which can be seen from the experience we had in the Palestinian elections. Really? We had an experience in the Palestinian elections? I thought they were Palestinian elections for Palestinian people. How could we have had an experience in it? I don't know. Maybe Waleed Shobat's the odd little head has grown so swollen that he uses the Victorian regal we now, on which President George W. Bush insisted. The results ushered in a divide between Islamists and so-called moderate Palestinian authority. Palestinians were killing Palestinians in the streets as Hamas ran rampant, executing other Muslims who didn't agree with their agenda. But unlike that miniature state of psychosis, the scale of mayhem in Egypt will be immense. Egypt's democratic elections will simply change one form of dictatorship into another. You know what? That's a possibility, I suppose. But if it is a possibility, it is a possibility that is predicated upon the choice of the people. You know, in democratic elections, the people are free to do stupid things. That's one of those double-edged sword moments of democracy now, isn't it? Right? I mean, in 2000, we had democratic elections in the United States, and George W. Bush was selected for us as our president because people did stupid things. Something on the order of a listener wrote to me about the whole 2000 election debacle and pointed something out. In 2000, in Florida, if we're going to talk specifically about Florida, I maintain that if we're going to do that kind of rear-view mirror navel-gazing, just imagine trying to do that. Sounds like fun, doesn't it? That we might as well just say that if West Virginia hadn't screwed the pooch, we wouldn't have gotten George W. Bush either. But if we're going to look at Florida, look at the demographics, and you find out that something like 91% of the Muslim population in Florida, which numbers in the tens of thousands, they voted for George W. Bush. Straight up. You know, no butterfly ballot BS. No Pat Buchanan instead of... No. They straight up voted for George W. Bush. And it wouldn't be the only time that the American people have done something stupid. Look at the people of West Virginia. Well, no, that doesn't count because their choices... No. Look at the election of Ronald Reagan. There's a case of the American people stupidly biting on jingoistic, the saber-rattling sound bites and electing a greasy-headed old freak over a committed man of conscience. So we got that going. Yeah. Look at the hidebound old right-wing redneck conservatives who helped push Richard Nixon over the top in November of 1968. We do stupid things. Look at the election of Warren Gamaliel Harding following Woodrow Wilson. Stupid. We've done a lot of dumb things. And that is a function of a democratic process. And even the presidential selection process in the United States isn't democratic, but it's as close to democracy as we can get. And nobody ever says, hey, the people of the United States don't have the right to do stupid crap at the voting booth. But suddenly, this elitist little right-wing jackass, Waleed Shobot, is worried about the Egyptian people doing something dumb with an election. You know what? There was a democratic election. I know I've mentioned this several times. Maybe you're tired of it. I don't care. There was a democratic election held on whether or not the Athenian city-state should, in the name of the people of Athens, the Demokratia, murder Socrates. There was a democratic election. And that democratic election decided that Socrates was better off dead than alive. Oh, well, at least it was democratic. We have this false equivalence. There's another one. Between good and democratic. Democracy, like evolution, is neutral. It does not guarantee good results. It merely guarantees popular ones. And the same may be said of evolution. Which the right wing doesn't believe in. Never mind, that's another gripe. The most plausible outcome for Egypt's chaos is a future election as demanded by world opinion, the outcome of which can be seen from the yada, 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 yada. Whether it is the Iranian, Shia, or Sunni revolutions, the way to victory will not be only by stepping over Israel, but also over Arabia, the cradle of Wahhabism that started the trouble in the first place. Really? Don't think so. Waleed Shobot has apparently never read T.E. Lawrence. Wahhabism rises and falls, and right now it's in a sort of state-sponsored ascendancy. That's the difference now. The royal house of Ibn Saud gives state-level legitimacy to Wahhabism that would otherwise not be there. They'd just be a weird little freaky sect of Islam. Sort of the way, the evangelical fundamentalist snake handlers are here. So, as a consequence, says Shobot, the world will kiss its addiction to Arab oil goodbye after Iran destroys Arabia with nuclear weapons. We are hard into the science fiction now, Mr. Shobot. You mean the nuclear weapons that Iran doesn't have? Yeah, those nuclear weapons. You can say that I am mad. No, I'm going to say that you're stupid. But the documents released by WikiLeaks reveal that King Abdullah bin Abdul Aziz repeatedly urged the United States to attack Iran in order to halt its suspected nuclear weapons program. See, even he says suspected. Not proven, not actual, not real, just paranoidly suspected. If in doubt, ask yourself, didn't Saddam Hussein send Scuds crashing over Saudi Arabia during the first Gulf War? Well, where's the linkage? None. If he'd had nuclear warheads, wouldn't he have used them there? Them there what? Them there Scuds? Oh, no, them there nukes. I didn't know former Muslim Brotherhood terrorists from Chicago like Waleed Chobot used hillbilly phraseology forms like them there. If he'd had nuclear warheads, wouldn't he have used them there? Them there nuclear warheads. MR not pigs, MR ducks. And while the progressives cry, where are the weapons of mass destruction? Is there any doubt that Iraq's neighbors are building them? We didn't invade Iraq because Iraq's neighbors were building weapons of mass destruction, and yes, there is doubt. Once Obama succeeds in pulling our troops out of Iraq as a good gesture to satisfy the screaming and complaining progressives that the U.S. is not an occupier, see, it's our fault, then Iraq will, it's not because we shouldn't be an occupying power, that's not it. It's not because that's not the business of the United States. It's because we're screaming and whining and complaining. Don't forget the complaining. Then Iraq will immediately be gobbled up by Iran. Waka, 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 waka. And like the miniature Hezbollah-Hamas alliance against Israel, you will have a future Turkish-North African-Iranian alliance, which will try to put the Islamic Caliphate Humpty Dumpty back together again so they can dash in and liberate Jerusalem. Whatever he's on, I don't want none of it. Because apparently it makes you see, like, breathing walls and melting sky and... In the meantime, the Islamists will lay low, calling for democracy, and just like Arafat did, pretend to denounce terrorism at the cost of upsetting Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda? Al-Qaeda? Where did they come into this? Who then gobbles it up, waka, 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 and into the belly of its Trojan horse. Trojan horse. I'm thinking those were the Achaeans, the Hellenes, not the Arabs. Oh, well. We're mixing our mythology here. Apparently there are no boundaries for Waleed Chobot, which, upon fully entering the fortresses of the West, will release its Al-Qaeda locusts into Israel, where they will meet their final destruction. Exclamation point. I'm thinking this guy is, yes, a moron, but I'm thinking he might also be rather badly in need of some anti-psychosis medications. That is just stunningly dumb, isn't it? I mean, was there a scintilla, an iota of actual fact involved with any of that foolishness? Yeah, me neither. A couple of emails rolling in before we take a break. Marty noting, I would think that Greece or Libya would be more likely to annex Egypt than Turkey, but what does a Samantha Brown fan know? Oh. I fear I've stepped on Marty's fixation. No, it's okay, Marty. She's no Rachel Ray. She's not sitting there on camera opening cans of Progresso soup and saying she cooked it. Greece, Libya, I'm thinking nobody's going to annex Egypt. Nobody has the power to annex Egypt. Because annexation is something that sort of is done against one's will. Instead of the Ottoman Empire, I'm thinking that what Waleed Chobot was pointing toward was maybe the old... Because I remember we learned about it in grade school. That that loose alliance of Arab countries. What was it called? UAR, United Arab Republic, or something like that. Egypt was part of that. Wasn't that during the Nasser days?
Yeah.
Darlene writes in and says, you're pretty much saying this anyway, talking about Moran nominations, but my Moran nominations are the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton for their audacity to lecture the Egyptian people about forming a representative democracy via peaceful transition. We can't even do it correctly here at home, says Darlene, and we're lecturing them? We've supported Mubarak, the dictator, in his oppression of the Egyptian people, and we're lecturing them? I'm utterly embarrassed. Notice how the Repiglickens are all too happy to let the Obama administration handle this. According to the establishment mouthpiece and poor excuse for a real journalist, Cokie Roberts, on NPR this morning, the Republicans are backing the Obama administration 100% because they know what a difficult situation this is. Bull. So, what's new? The Repigs are also morons. They probably hold the record for the longest-running Moran streak anyway. Well, that too, is true, Darlene. And they're not exactly in lockstep agreement with the Obama administration. I offer you Diaper Dave Vitter, the pig licking of Louisiana. He told Fox News, in light of the developing situation in Egypt, gas prices are going to keep going up, whether it's because of the Suez Canal or just world conditions. Americans are fed up with Obama administration failure to use our domestic energy resources. He wants to drill in his backyard or something. Or maybe just he wants some more BP Horizon disasters. Then there's Fred Upton, Repig Lickin of Michigan, the chair of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. The tenuous situation in Egypt underscores our vulnerabilities and the need for American-made energy. Now is not the time for policies that lock away our domestic oil and gas resources. Then there's Representative Jeff Landry, Repig Lickin from Louisiana. I want to see coastal Louisianans allowed back to work, finding and recovering our domestic energy sources. Allowing production to occur in the Gulf will help alleviate the economic crisis of a Suez Canal shutdown and prevent Americans from paying $5 a gallon for gas. Let's see, is there a short answer to that? No, it won't. If you drilled 100,000 wells in the Gulf of Mexico right now, production wouldn't do diddly about any sort of Suez Canal shutdown. But God, why do I bother? That's how stupid these right-wing Repiglickens are. And what else do you call it? Uninformed? Horse feathers. They have access to the same information you and I do. But unlike us, they receive checks from the oil industry, and that's why they say things that are directly contrary to actual fact. Jeebus. Andy dropping a note saying, you nailed Egypt on Friday. The Sunday New York Times mentioned that we have contributed $35 billion to the Egyptian military since the 1978 Camp David Accords. Roughly $1.5 billion annually. A few Egyptian generals were even meeting at the Pentagon in Washington when the uprising was commencing. They had to rush back to Egypt. According to the Times, we funded 1,000 M1 Abrams tanks. I thought those were M1s that were sitting in the streets. Built in Egypt with U.S. parts, many armored vehicles, and of course, the tear gas canisters were manufactured in Jamestown, Pennsylvania at Combined Systems International. Who says we don't manufacture in America? Rick Smith, are you listening? Overall, we own their military free and clear. It's ours. We bought it. Also, says Andy, the appointed by Hosni Mubarak, Vice President Omar Suleiman, 75-year-old ex-general, was, of course, and this should be taken very seriously, the U.S. point man for Bush's rendition program. He's another torturer at the helm. How convenient. No worries, we've got our man on deck at the levers of the Egyptian dictatorship. Says Andy, I applaud the brave, courageous people of Egypt for working to throw off the yoke of tyranny. I hope the Egyptians get fair elections, open to all political parties to choose their own leadership without the U.S. meddling in their affairs. Unfortunately, the CIA has no clue what a democracy is, there or here. Was Bush elected? My ass he was in 2000 or 2004. Thanks, and you had it right on Friday. And thank you, Andy, and let me mention this because Andy reminds me. It was wall-to-wall punditiocracy on Sunday news programs, and everybody was speculating, and there was, you know, the Wolf Blitzer asking, why would he bring in Suleiman as the vice? No one really knows why he chose Suleiman. Bull! Everybody but the for-profit media knows why Suleiman was chosen. He's a kneecapper. He's a headbreaker. He's a thug. He's a spook. He's a puppet. He's a torturer. Hosni Mubarak brought in Mr. Suleiman for the same reason that George H.W. Bush brought in Dan Quayle in 1988. So he can look at the people and go, okay, you really want me to step down? I got the guy back here with the diehard battery and the jumper cables. He's ready to go. He's ready to be your president. I'm ready to turn. You sure you want him? Just like George H.W. Bush could look and go, you all want to keep me extra safe. Because if anything happens to me, you get him. And he points over at Dan Quayle playing with his earwax. Nobody said that except me. But you know what? It's true. It is factual. The best way for Hosni Mubarak to make himself look better is to make the guy behind him look worse. The only thing that would have made it more obvious would be if he had named Boris Badenov his vice president. And Natasha. Sheesh. Morons. Marty noting, I believe you said it already, but if you didn't, UAR, United Arab Republic. Yep, there we go. That's what it was. Jim noting, I wish the people of Egypt well. However, history teaches what is unreal one day becomes real the next. And those who start revolutions do not finish them. Such situations can become fluid quickly. Oh, I think it's fluid now. But I think for the United States to say these people can participate, but these people cannot. Because all weekend long, there was this steady drumbeat of Muslim Brotherhood, Muslim Brotherhood, Muslim Brotherhood. As if everybody was walking around with their little Muslim Brotherhood secret decoder rings on all over Egypt and just ready to jump into power. But it turns out that the Muslim Brotherhood, and you had someone of an expertise level along the lines of Muhammad al-Baradei say it, that the Muslim Brotherhood is not a threat. And, you know, he should know. He got a lot of stuff right. Remember, it was Muhammad al-Baradei who tried to tell the United States that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and lo and behold, he was correct. Glenn Beck, apparently, our good friend Angelo, otherwise known as Stop Beck on Twitter, stopbeck.com, he watches Glenn Beck, so we don't have to. Angelo noted in a Twitter exchange with me earlier today that Glenn Beck was having a temper tantrum hissy fit against al-Baradei, saying that he was wrong, wrong, wrong! And saying that al-Baradei had said that there are no nuclear weapons in Iran, which al-Baradei had never said. He did, however, as Angelo noted, say that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and he was correct about it, and the right wing have been pissed off about that ever since. Oh, there's a ton of fascinating stuff out there. How wrong can you possibly get one issue department? I offer you the Reverend Pundit Mike Huxterby. Remember Mike Huxterby, former governor of Arkansas, current Fox News. That's a brand name. political the commentator, the guy whose son tortured a dog to death. Yeah, that Mike Huckabee. He's got designs on the presidency. So here, when the essential urge for self-rule and basic freedom is sweeping over Egypt, what did Mike Huckabee do? Mike Huckabee went to Israel, and he joined Israeli officials at a ceremony yesterday to lay the cornerstone for a new Israeli settlement in occupied East Jerusalem. Jesus. Of course, that's going to play real big with the fundies. And by the way, speaking of fundies, apparently, the percentage, and maybe this is something that could be worked out by social scientists, apparently the percentage of fundies in a country almost has, it's almost got some sort of self-limiter. It's almost like there are not, that no society can tolerate a level of stupidity that is required to be a fundamentalist above a certain number and still function. Hence, the percentage of people in Egypt who are Muslim Brotherhood are roughly equivalent to the people in the United States who are Christian fundamentalists. Like I've said before, the difference is between normal people in secular society and fundamentalists of all stripe, not between Muslim fundamentalists and Christian fundamentalists. If you sit a Christian fundamentalist down with a Muslim fundamentalist, they're going to find out that they've got a lot in common and that their problems are with us. And, of course, Mike Huckabee is precisely one of those snake-handling, strychnine-drinking, tongue-speaking, floor-rolling Christian fundamentalists. At this cornerstone laying ceremony for a new Israeli settlement in occupied East Jerusalem yesterday, Huckabee said the following: "It is inconceivable in many ways that we would even have to argue and debate whether or not Israelis could live in Israel, not just in parts of Israel, but anywhere in Israel they wish to live." God, there's only one problem. Occupied East Jerusalem is not Israel. It's part of the occupied territories. Clearly illegal settlements under international law, which Israel really doesn't care much about. See, Huckabee is one of those Israel fetishists. Rather than treating the Israeli people as real, live, flesh and blood, living, breathing human beings, they are fetish toys for his cultish religious tendencies. He has said, and I quote in the past, there's no such thing as a Palestinian. He's also said that the Palestinians should find another homeland elsewhere, you know, somewhere else. Like Mars. But no, the Muslim Brotherhood is not it is exactly what it is. It's a bugaboo that has been ginned up by the right wing for the purposes of the ignorant, the credulous, and the bigoted. And as I noted, Mohammed al-Baradei said exactly, that the threat of the so-called Muslim Brotherhood that Waleed Shobat fulminated about so idiotically. Al-Baradei told Farid Zakaria, "This is a myth that was sold by the Mubarak regime, that it's either us, the ruthless dictators, or a Muslim Al-Qaeda type. The Muslim Brotherhood has nothing to do with the Iranian movement, has nothing to do with extremism, as we have seen it in Afghanistan and other places. The Muslim Brotherhood is a religiously conservative group. They are a minority in Egypt. They are not a majority of the Egyptian people, but they have a lot of credibility because of liberal parties that have been a struggle for 30 years. They are in favor of a secular state. They are in favor of an institution that has bread lines. They are in favor of that every Egyptian have the same rights, the same state, that the state is in no way a state based on religion. Gosh, it doesn't sound real that scary. They sound actually less frightening than Mike Huckabee. But, you know, who the hell am I? So that's... Joe Ray just dropped in a note. He said, Iraq. Bob, I was in Iraq, as we all know by now. The U.S. looking for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq was like watching Spaceballs comb the desert. Unfortunately, I was a Spaceball during my stay there. Oy. Yeah. So it's 5 minutes before the hour. The lines are open. And there really are other stories. There's a story today, a fascinating little bit of an undercover bust that was brainchilded, allegedly, by New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, for whom I have no great amount of love, but certainly got it right on this one. A story there. And some right-wing terrorism got thwarted here in the United States. Maybe we'll have time for that as well. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, BobKincaid@gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Your heart's a made of Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Hey, did you hear the Bubble Genius ad?
Yeah.
There's plenty of time left to get yourself some Valentine's Day goodies. Go to bubblegenius.com and have a look around. Some fun stuff going to be coming up from Bubble Genius. We have some stuff in the works that I think you're really going to enjoy. How would you like to shower with the horn? Not shower with Bob. Stop that. How would you like to shower with the horn? Well, it's entirely possible that there will be some Bubble Genius horn products out there at specially discounted prices only for horn listeners. I'll tell you more about that as the situation develops. How's that? But bubblegenius.com. And by all means, sign up for the newsletter. And when you do, I don't know, send them a message. Tell them you heard about it on the horn. You see, this is actually kind of important. We talk about we talk about the paucity of liberal businesses out there. When we find one, for the love of God, let's support it. And I'm not saying this because I'm getting paid to. I'm saying this because I walk the walk and obviously talk the talk. This is a great little company. And it's not, and everything is lovingly handmade. My God, check this out. For Valentine's Day, if you've got somebody that you enjoy romping and rolling around with, try this on for size. Want to give your beloved something sweet and yet different? Try Sexy Time Edible Body Powder, sweetened with honey. Sadly, that makes it non-vegan. Oops. But still. Sexy Time Edible Body Powder, available in chocolate or vanilla from Bubble Genius. And it comes with a feather duster.
Oh, feather dusters.
Yeah. BubbleGenius.com. These are some wonderful, wonderful people doing, making truly amazing products. And, by the way, they've also got a Glenn Beck voodoo doll. Now, wouldn't that be fun? Anybody ever want to check and find out whether voodoo dolls really work? How about getting hold of the Bubble Genius voodoo doll in Glenn Beck? And maybe we could, I don't know, through the offices of the auspices of the horn, we could all get our little pins and our little Glenn Beck voodoo dolls, and we, 3, 2, 1. Where would you stick the pin in the Glenn Beck voodoo doll? And by the way, they're stuffed with elephant poo paper. Literally full of GOP crap. So, BubbleGenius.com is a... Well, you're not... You will never have felt better about your morning your morning shower or your evening bath. I promise. BubbleGenius.com. It's about 8 minutes past the hour. You know the phone number. Lines are open. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. And let's see who's on the line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, listen, I mean, it's interesting, you know, with Egypt and its dictatorship. I mean, everything was going all wonderful, you know, until, because I was looking it up, you know, until their little neoliberal kicked in high gear in 2004. And guess what?
Everything went sideways.
They privatized, and all the wealth got more, you know, the same story. I mean, it's amazing. It's like all the inflation hit, you know, your basic purchasing power just went away for the masses. 40% people are in poverty, you know, and it's unbelievable. It's just this neoliberal policies are so horrible. They make a bad situation so much worse. And I'm not saying that you know, they don't have other grievances, obviously a dictatorship, but it's amazing, you know, how, like you said, the bread, people can't eat, you know, shit happens.
Yeah, bread. And we really can't overemphasize bread. We're not talking about the recommended daily allowance of bonbons. Bread.
And I have to, you know, if I may, you know, say, toot my own horn and the horn. Didn't I send you an email last Tuesday saying Egypt was setting off?
Yeah, I do believe you did. In fact, yep, I got it right here.
Right. So I'm just, you know, saying it ain't like all everyone else is. Every people also shocked at all, you know. And it's like, I mean, it's shocking on some levels, because they've had such a iron fist on the Egyptians, but not in lieu of the financial crisis and the weakness of neoliberalism. And, you know, shit is now popping off. Now, the problem here, though, if I can put on my, I used to read every issue of Foreign Policy.
Oh, do please.
For a moment. It's, you know, it's a problem for the U.S. because of the stability that was afforded for our interests and for Israel. So in the sort of foreign policy parlors, you know, they're freaking out because it's like, oh, dear, you know, they don't know what's going to be happening next. And Israel, not so much us, because, I mean, our interests are sort of, you know, not... It's not directly going to impact. But Israel, I guarantee you they are fucking freaking out. Because they had this assumption of a 30-year agreement with Egypt, no problem. You repress your Egyptian people, and we can continue fucking over the Palestinians in perpetuity. But, oh, well, that looks like that might be in a problem. I don't know how it's going to
It could be in the future. The interesting thing, though, about all this is, you know, nobody's out there burning American or Israeli flags or even so much as talking much about the Palestinians. I get the sense that the Egyptian problems are a little too close to Egyptian doorsteps, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I just think that, but all I'm saying is that the Israeli government and the U.S., they won't be able to count on, the sort of pliability that they had with Mubarak. And you know what I'm saying?
And once again, real democracies are messy things for situations like that.
Well, and also, though, you know, I'm sick of the sort of freak out here about the Muslim Brotherhood or whoever else they want to deal with. Egypt has a fairly large civil society, and, hello, they can, you know, do what the hell they want. I think it's quite interesting that the arms dealers are going to be scrambling with whatever government so they can see if they can keep their deals going. I mean, on that level, it's laughable to me because, you know, all these companies here are freaking out because they're going to lose a lot of money if the Egyptians aren't willing to play ball anymore.
Well, you know, there's that old saying that there's no such thing as PR as long as they spell your name right, except for that one little company in Pennsylvania that Andy mentioned. You think maybe they're getting a little nervous? What was the name of it? Combined Systems International, the manufacturer of the tear gas canisters?
Yeah.
I wonder how folks there in Jamestown, PA feel about having a tear gas manufacturer right there, you know, where, you know, a little industrial accident could do some real damage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's not like these people want all that information out. You're right about that. But also, I think it's funny that, you know, the sort of selective internet that they're shutting down. Of course, they didn't shut down all the internet in Egypt. They kept one going.
Yeah.
That runs the stock market there and the ones that all the multinationals need. I mean...
Yeah, that one does seem to still be working, doesn't it?
Right, and it's just when you pull the curtain back and it's just the exposure. But apparently, I was reading some article that the wealth disparity is about the same as it is here.
I read something similar, and I'd never heard of this coefficient, this scale, the Gini coefficient, G-I-N-I.
Yeah, I told you about it. I think I mentioned that to you before. Maybe the Gini coefficient is what measures, wealth disparity, yeah.
And it turns out that, let's see, Tunisia is the 62nd most economically unequal country. Yemen is the 76th most unequal country. Egypt is the 90th most unequal country. The U.S. is ranked as the 42nd. We are more income unequal than Tunisia, Yemen, or Egypt.
Well, it's just, you know, and the thing is, so people need to sort of step back before they poo-poo what's going on in Egypt. I mean, the economic indicators aren't really that far apart. I just think, you know...
Well, no, there's a whole hell of a lot of physician heal thyself in this, Sandra,
yeah,
as far as the United States is concerned.
And, you know, I mean, I know we've talked about... I mean, the Middle East with its youth, you know, where you have 50, 60% of populations under 30. I mean, listen, this is what happens. You have all these young men. What? It's just a perfect combination, and I don't think it's going to get any easier for some of these other authoritarian countries either out there.
I guess it marks me as profoundly shallow, or else it marks me as some sort of reincarnated revolutionary, maybe, if you go in for that kind of thing. But I can't think of anybody that bloody revolution would, and I'm, this is me, this isn't anybody else, I can't think of anybody I would love to see bloody revolution happen to more than the Royal House of Ibn Saud. I mean, talk about a bunch that's earned it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, that, yeah, that's,
Did you see that one, I forget who the pundit was, but he was someone, it was some commentator from Saudi Arabia who said the unrest that started in Tunisia and has promulgated in Egypt has no chance in Saudi Arabia because we never had any freedom in the first place. What kind of comment is that? Right, it's a total monarchic dictatorship.
Yeah, well, see, but that, you know, those sort of comments is coming from people who are in a bubble. You know, be careful. That you know what I mean? That sort of, those sort of statements. It's like you never have as big of a grip on power as you think.
Well, don't places like Dubai and Saudi Arabia have a sort of a little three-fifths problem of their own? Aren't the natives vastly outnumbered by the vassal imported labor they've got there?
Well, yeah, there's that, and like I said, you know, Kuwait, they will pay off their folks, but the Saudis won't. It's a horrible.
No, they'll just skull crack.
No, don't they just sort of cut off people's heads for sports at this point? I mean, it's a horrible regime, and I don't, you know, I think the U.S. will do anything to keep that propped. And it's, you know, Obama, they're all sort of walking this fine line. They're not too sure how to approach it. But I do think that they're preparing for him to go away. But they would probably like for some other dictator-type person to replace him. I heard he has cancer anyway.
At 82, I think everybody does, don't they?
Well, I mean, he's sort of, you know, apparently pretty bad off. That's what they're saying, but who knows? But his son is fled to England, which I think is hilarious. You know what time it is.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he is like, oh, well, I thought you were going to take over. Next thing you know, he's in some flash apartment in...
You know what, Dad? I'd rather hang out in London discos, if that's okay by you. We've got the money salted away in Switzerland, right? Yeah, good. Right. Now, you know, I think of the Saudis... And I immediately think of Denis Diderot, you know, the French philosopher, the one who said, mankind will never truly be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest.
Oh, right, yes.
Because if you want to look to the source of Saudi Arabian despotism, it is that unholy alliance between the Wahhabist religious freaks and the power mad monarchs of the royal house, and it's only because they exist in that symbiotic relationship that they can maintain power. And so, you know, if there's ever a crack in that, and I think the head's feeling a little more wobbly on the neck than anybody in the Saudi castle would like to admit.
Well, yeah, I mean, hence that sort of comment, because that, you know, that's ridiculous what you just told me. It's sort of like, yeah, I think you're protesting a little bit too much there, freak. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I'm hoping that it's not going to get, you know, bloody for these people tomorrow.
Oh, I hope not, too.
Because that's a lot of people that they're talking about hitting it. And, you know, if the army sides with them, it's over with, and I think, you know, they seem to have more hatred towards the police and security apparatus than the military. So,
there appears to be genuine respect for their military among pretty much all classes of the Egyptian people.
And also, it's interesting that, you know, there must be some sort of, I don't know if it's institutional or something, but. Because there's all sorts of people who are doing this. You know, it's apparently crossing all strata. So, you know, that tells me that something is going to give, you know?
The thing that makes me so daggum nervous, Sandra, is I don't trust I don't trust the United States' instinct for not screwing it up.
Oh, no, I'm really worried about I'm so worried about the U.S. because they kind of hold the cards in some respect because of their close relationship with the regime. And let's be honest. I mean, these people, it's 30 years of this bullshit. So, why not? If so many people there don't have anything to lose because economically they've been sort of strangled, this is kind of the natural progression, as far as I can tell.
Seems like it is. And by the way, email coming in from Ron in Raleigh. He says, London, you say? Remember they had to drag Bashir al-Assad kicking and screaming back to Syria from London. He's still not a happy camper.
Shut up. Well, the thing is, though, Mubarak, you know, he might have, he better wake up. He might be facing the Romanian solution.
And does he not? Do they think about that? You know, we're speculation, but do they think about that? Does he realize that could happen?
I don't know, but see, I know I'm sounding really sick, and I don't mean to, but...
Well, no, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in Egypt that doesn't work right now. You know, there's no water at the airport.
Yeah, no. I'm not too sure. They're probably, I guess, but there's a good chance that he could go out like that, if he's that stubborn. Because Ceausescu was very stubborn, and we saw what happened to him and his wife.
I don't mean to laugh,
but that was like one of my most favorite coups in the 89 period when you had that huge transition then, which some people are comparing 89 to this in the Middle East, although the freaks here are all upset because they're worried about the fundamentalist equation, which makes it a little bit more 79-ish in their mind. Am I talking in code?
No. You're not at all. But I don't think this bears. I don't think this bears any remote resemblance to 1979 in Iran.
Well, I don't think it does. I'm saying that's the sort of, stuff I've been seeing at least in the National Review and these sort of Israeli freaks.
Well, you know, consider this lunatic whose interview pitch that I've led the show with. The revival of the Ottoman Empire?
The next thing you know, we'll be talking about the caliphate stretching from Spain to wherever. They'll be back to that again.
The American right wing has been blathering that since September 11th, 2001.
Well, I'm saying, it's that again. I mean, but the thing is, it's just that, but it ain't moving nobody because, I still will hold to my argument that this also shows the weakness of the U.S. in its, hegemonic position, too.
Yeah, that we can't pull that trick anymore?
Yeah, I think that, although it's very entertaining to look at Hillary, that bitch, it's like, get it straight, lady. Now she's calling for a big confab with all her ambassadors. What are they going to do? Try to figure out what the next capital is and go up in flames?
Yeah, let's take it easy on speeches to lecturing speeches to other foreign leaders for a little while, just saying.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because in 89 when you had all the Eastern European bloc, when the dominoes fell on that totalitarian system, you didn't have the sort of collapse of capitalism too. This whole thing is scary because there is no bolt. There's nothing to fall back on now. It's like, well, okay, communism fell apart, and now we seem to be looking at capitalism, too. Because no one's going to tell me that the effed up IMF policies isn't contributing to these places teetering, And it just goes to prove that the sort of Cold War, as bad as it was, definitely had countervailing aspects to it.
Jesus. And the thing, yeah, you're exactly right. There's nothing. Let's see, what does Paul Ryan call him? There's no hammock for economically speaking for this stuff to land in, because capitalism is dying.
Right.
Communism is dead.
Yeah, at least in '89 they had the dream of the open market, but hello.
Yeah, how did that work out?
Well, I'm just saying. I just it's very interesting to watch, and it's kind of scary. I don't really know what to make of it. But speaking of Ryan, did you get that article I sent to you?
Yes, I did.
Ain't that about the shit?
Well, it kind of goes hand in hand. It was 2 weeks ago now that we found out that Ayn Rand took Social Security.
Yeah, but this fool put away the Social Security from his dead father.
Right, and now it turns out that Paul Ryan wants to fix Social Security so others can't have what he had.
It's the Clarence Thomas syndrome, that's what I call it.
Yeah, it is, only, I guess, is it more or less disgusting because
Oh, no, it's really disgusting. No, I'm just saying it falls in the same mode of these people who benefit from policies that they turn around once they're in place and annihilate. That's what, Thomas with the affirmative action.
Right, stomping on the fingers on the ladder, on the rungs of the ladder below him.
Right, and so, you know, but it was just despicable when I read that. I thought, and they were so matter-of-fact, kind of la-la-la. I'm thinking, he did what? And what? And who?
Yeah, and just to, yeah, just to flesh this out a little bit, it turns out that Paul Ryan, who said he feared that the social safety net would be turned into a social hammock. If you, I kind of went when he said it the first time, but it's one of those things that sort of has to age like a really, really noxious wine, and gets worse as it goes. It's astonishing. You know, on the one hand, your human sympathy says, Jesus, that's got to be awful. Because he's the guy who, at the age of 15, I think, found his dad laying dead. And his mom had to go back to work. She learned interior design. And he got Social Security survivor benefits, and he socked them all away so he could go to college on it.
Okay, which was a good decision.
That was a smart thing to do.
And that's a good thing to do. But, hello, how was that? How was he able to do that? Because of this program that he, you know, it's just, those people are despicable. I have no room for these hypocrites when they want to destroy the safety net for everybody.
Right, and you know, henceforward, he is Paul Hammock Ryan to me.
No, he is despicable. I mean, I just couldn't even believe that, and how they sort of just wanted to fall off of your back when you read it. And I'm like, you got to be crazy. This, anyway.
Yeah, and the quote is from his response to the State of the Union: "We're at a moment where, if government's growth is left unchecked and unchallenged, America's best century will be considered our past century. This is a future in which we will transform our social safety net into a hammock, which lulls able-bodied people into lives of complacency and dependency." How dare he? How dare he, Sandra?
But what he did was what? I'm sorry, what?
Oh, that was pulling himself up by his bootstraps in the midst of a family tragedy and proving the American dream.
Right, you know, I mean, and it's just sort of, if that's a Democrat doing those sort of things, they're completely discredited. Like when a Democrat says, oh, we shouldn't go to Iraq, he's never listened to again. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, he was for it before he was against it, before he was for it, blah, 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 blah.
Right, now he's done, it's like this, but this fool is going to be able to keep stepping up, talking about destroying Social Security. I don't know. I was just, that story there just made me feel really sick. I was so disturbed by it. I guess I shouldn't be, but...
Well, no, you should be disturbed. You shouldn't be surprised, if I can, you know, give marching orders that way.
But it's
so par for the course for them. I've got mine, screw you.
Yeah, no, it really
But the underpinning of it, Sandra, this notion that having this lulls able-bodied people into lives of complacency and dependency. In other words, row, you son of a bitch, row. And if you don't die here at the oars, you know, or we'll whip you some more.
Yeah.
Work till you die. That's what America's about, because you're not me, and I've got mine, and I want it all. I mean, is there a better example of they want it all than this?
Yeah, no, it's incredible. I just think that it's just stunning.
Because remember, this rotten son of a bitch gives away copies, like when he goes to visit and give little talks at junior high schools and high schools and stuff, he takes copies of Atlas Shrugged with him. Gives them out to impressionable teens.
Well, they both benefited from Social Security. No, that makes them despicable sociopaths, as far as I'm concerned, both of them. And unfortunately, Ryan ain't where Ann is. I'm sorry. I know that sounds horrible, but deliver me from these people. They're horrifying. Anyway, I just also, and this is a different subject, but did you see that football ad?
Yeah, I did. And
isn't that interesting that, you know, you read what I wrote, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, come on.
Well, I'll take it a step further. This is, of course, a football ad called, it's a it's an ad called Let Them Play that argues in favor argues against the owners locking out the NFL's football players and the NFL's union, which is nothing more than a shameless attempt to break the union in the first place. And the NFLPA tried to actually buy ad time, right, to run this during the Super Bowl.
On the people's so-called airwaves.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
And it was turned down. Now, you said, I bet they'll pay the owners their TV money even without airing any football next season and maybe destroying the players' union in the process, all of which I agree with. But let's take it a step further, Sandra. Remember last year when they ran the miraculous birth of little Timmy Jebo ad?
Exactly.
Now, they could run that. But they can't run an ad saying, we want football next year. We want football next year is more controversial than the miraculous virgin birth of little Timmy Jebo.
No, they didn't let the counter to that run either, remember?
That's right.
Basketball players talking about choice. Remember, they didn't let that run. I mean, it's just so blatant. But what's really disturbing, though, is that last time I heard, the airways, they so-called leased them. But I guess they just own them now, and we have no say.
Well, anyway. Effectively, that's true, Sandra, because the possibility of pulling a broadcast license is effectively mathematical zero.
Right, and so we're being censored by these corporations. It ain't a whole lot different than what's going on in Egypt, if I may tie it over.
Yeah, and you want to take it a step further to something you and I have talked about from time to time. This is the old Lochner privity of contract argument. Well, you know, it's up to them to decide what they run and what they don't run. They're the ones who, you know, they can choose to enter into contracts with those whom they choose to enter into contracts with.
Mm.
We don't want to interfere with that. And, you know, God Almighty.
Well, no, but see, now we're just dealing with just power laws. That's all everything seems to be broken down to. I forget the economist who came up with that, the 80-20 business. Pareto or...
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, no one seems to look at these corporations for what they are. You know, they're about as oppressive as these autocrats at this point. Why in the world can't this football players union run an ad dealing with their own interests on a network? What the hell is going on here?
And yet, when I watch the cable news networks, I'm not talking about just CNN, I've been bombarded lately with these ads that show this vacuous woman pushing a buggy through a grocery store saying, the government wants to add more food taxes on soda pop and candy. They're trying to tell me what I can and cannot feed my children. We don't need more taxes on food. And yet that's not controversial, but this is?
And not to mention that, what's that, Arkansas governor, that freak?
Oh, Huckabee?
Yeah, he's running those ads talking about we need to roll back to health care. That's on every 5 seconds, too. Have you seen those?
Yes, I have.
And it's just kind of like, oh, but a union, no union, no matter if it's representing rich assholes or not, can't get any look-see. Something's really wrong.
Well, and the thing that undergirds that, if I may, is that, go back to Citizens United, Sandra. You know what? There was tons of Citizens United money in the last election cycle, and in the last election cycle, all the unions broke themselves on the rocks of Citizens United. They don't have money to run an ad for, thank a teacher for the fact that Johnny can read. They can't do that. They can't afford it. They literally cannot afford it now. And it's part of an ill-conceived strategy of long-term, but the fact remains, they can't afford it. Meanwhile, the right wing can run ads till they're blue in the face and get Emory and Eileen to talk about, I don't want no tax on my tater chips.
No, and you just had a court down in Florida, decide that the mandate business wasn't constitutional today. So,
and not just the mandate part. He decided, and this is the critical part of it, he decided that the whole Affordable Care Act has to go because it is non-severable from the mandate itself.
Well, the thing about it, though, is I'm like, yeah. And if it goes all the way to the Supreme Court, I think the Supreme Court's going to say, oh, well, we can't deprive the insurance company of 30 million customers, so it stays. Sorry. That's totally what I think. I'm like, this is all a bunch of chit-chat. Because the mandate is a Bob Dole exclusive.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an old Republican package. Anyway, I'm just wondering what this whole exercise is. Maybe it's just for spectating. Because there's no way that these corporations aren't going to cash in on the make people sign up for their product. Don't you think?
Well, yeah, I do.
I mean, I don't see how they're going to miss that tit.
And, you know, I admit it proves me for the vacuous person that I am, but I realize that I'm going to be at sea on Super Bowl Sunday.
Oh, listen, y'all should have got that shit rolling somewhere. It's a huge ship, ain't it?
Well, yeah, but the thing is, I was looking at the scheduling and everything, and I'm sure there's going to be some, like, you know, little forum or something, you know, where we can talk about, you know, important progressive ideals and visions and issues. And, you know, I have a feeling that something's going to come over me and I'm going to be slain in the spirit or something. And go, guys, I'm all for this. We got a week on the boat. Pittsburgh's playing Green Bay in the single most egalitarian Super Bowl in the last 30 years. I'm going to go to the Crow's Nest Lounge. And would anybody want to come and we'll talk about that? No, we won't talk during we'll talk during halftime.
Listen, you can spin this one good because Green Bay, the people on the team, and in Pittsburgh, it's the Rooney family, ain't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, you good. You good to go. You can call whatever spin you need to, Bob, but you need to be watching it. I'm going to be really upset if I have to hear about you leading some jibber-jabber. I didn't even be saying that because, you know, I know you're supposed to be doing what you're doing, but... That's kind of funny on you.
Well, but I mean, I know what I am, and I know who I am. And it's...
What's Agnes going to do? Is she going to help facilitate that, or is she going to make it difficult?
Yeah, well, no, she'll say, I'll take notes, honey. You go watch the game.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. that's right. Yeah, because you're going to be at... Are you going to be on the boat by then?
Oh, yeah. We leave, we sail out of Fort Lauderdale at 5 p.m. Saturday, and then we spend all day and all night, all of that night and all of the next day and night at sea, and we land at Grand Turk like 7 a.m. Monday morning. So that football game got to be on somewhere.
I seem to be having some sort of drama, so I people screaming and crying in the background.
All right, you take care, Sandra.
Okay.
All right, bye now. I'm sure, but I'm not trying to be shallow. It's just that, well, if you read Dave Zirin, he had a great article on the Green Bay Packers and the fact that the NFL, you know, the Green Bay Packers are publicly owned. And they never declare dividends. And you can't own more than a certain amount of shares. And their general manager has the best job, the best management job in football. And it was so scary to the NFL that they wrote a bylaw into the NFL code that says nobody else can do this except Green Bay. And Dave Zirin made the argument, why hasn't this been challenged in court? And frankly, I would suggest that it should be. Who's to say that everything in the NFL has to be on a for-profit basis? So I don't know. I don't want to be like Homer sitting in church trying to listen to the radio while the Reverend Hoosus is delivering the homily or anything, but you know what I mean. And by the way, speaking, lines are open, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333 if you want to jump in. It's Moran Monday. We can have some fun because God knows there's plenty about morans out there. News Ninja Gene just chimed in and says, excuse me? Rant mode on. The right-wingers are bitching about taxes on junk food while we give them taxes so they can grow the crap in the first place. Taxing Social Security is just fine, but taxing them so people have health care? Oh, no. No, no. Rant mode off. Oh, I understand, Gene. I understand completely. But then again, you know, we have a hard time with the right wing because understanding the right wing mindset makes our heads explode because they have to believe 17 impossible things at one time before they can make any head sense out of anything. Or they can do it without making sense of it, and they can just hold divergent opinions. It's just one great big nasty wad of cognitive dissonance inside the right wing skull. And so they're able to operate that way. They can, for instance, point to income inequality in Egypt without noting that the United States' income inequality is far greater than that of Egypt. No problem. That's because Jesus loves us. But then again, we have roughly the same number of fundamentalists in our country that Iran has in its and Egypt has in its. The question is, see, what happens is when the, and this much is true, when the fundamentalists get hold of power, they tend not to want to give it up. That's why, among other things, if you were reading the news over the weekend, you saw that the GOP wants to redefine rape. It's apparently a hot-button item on their agenda right now for the coming term. They want to redefine rape for abortion purposes. No, I said that. No, really. They want to redefine rape. I mean, Agnes looked over my shoulder and saw this story and about started having a fit. A plum fit. Because, well, you know, being female, this kind of stuff means something to her. And me being the male that's married to her, it means something to me, too. You can read the story over at Mother Jones. The House GOP's plan to redefine rape. Nick Bauman wrote it. The new House Republican majority is drafting laws to change the abortion laws of this country to say that rape is only rape in consideration of issues of abortion if it, quote-unquote, involves force. Wow. So consider what that means. This is the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act. It has 173 co-sponsors. Most of them are Republican, but some of them are Democrats. The Speaker of the House, John Boehner, has said that it's a top priority in the new Congress. The bill was introduced last week by Representative Chris Smith, a Republican from New Jersey. They say that what they want to do is change the rape exemption in the abortion law to forcible rape. So in the case, it wouldn't, for instance, cover what is often referred to generically as statutory rape. You know, where the guy's 22 and the girl is 15 and deemed incapable of consent by reason of her age, and therefore it is sexual assault, like, for instance, in West Virginia, sexual assault in the third degree. Well, to a Republican, that's no longer rape. It's okay if the 22-year-old gets your 15-year-old pregnant. No worries. If a girl, a woman, is given a roofie and is out of her mind from having been poisoned, and has sex put upon her, there's no force. So it's not a rape if she happens to get pregnant and is in fact poor enough to qualify to have Medicaid pay for an abortion. Also, and here's a fun part, if it turns out that she has a health savings account of her own money that's tax exempt, she couldn't use funds from that to pay for her own. If a woman says no, 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 and the guy does it anyway, and she gets pregnant, it wasn't rape. The bill would only allow federally funded abortions if a woman is under 18 in the case of incest. 18 and a day? Sorry. 19? Sorry. You're gonna have Uncle Cletus's baby. Fundamentalists. And if you want to read the story further, it's News Ninja Susan has it up at the Horn website, headonradionetwork.com. And yeah, Maura, I didn't want to mention it, but yeah, one of those few Democrats who signed on to this miserable bill, my congressman, Nick Rahal, he's a co-sponsor. He's one of those 173. West Virginia, where incest still, by God, happens. And my congressman is a supporter of the bill. Rough. Disgusting. But you're not surprised, are you? I should hope not. This is what happens when fundamentalists get hold of government. I've got another example after we take a couple of calls. What did I say a few minutes ago? When fundamentalists get hold of government, they start doing away with democratic principles. Not democracy, but democratic principles of self-government. And their reading of so-called scripture becomes the reading of so-called scripture. You're going to be sickened and shocked when you hear this other manifestation of it. But right now to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Man, that's disgusting.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm glad they're taking care of the business of the people, you know?
Well, just not the women people.
It's ridiculous. It's beyond ridiculous.
What's happening tonight?
Going back to Egypt. I love it when there's a whiff of revolution in the air, don't you?
Yeah, I kind of do. I know they're dangerous, and they have been bloody in the past. I hope this one is unbloody, or as unbloody as possible, because there's already been plenty of blood spilled.
Yeah, it takes me back to the heady days of the 60s. Just wondering, you know.
But there was no revolution in the 60s.
It just makes me wonder what it's going to take for the sheeple to get off their butts over here and send the oligarchs screaming for the hills.
Well, but let me at least make my position clear on this. There's nothing that it can take. It isn't going to happen.
Well,
I can't define any evidence at all that suggests that it would.
Yeah, well, you know. There's always a tipping point and there's always a trigger, and it's not always seen ahead of time, and I'll never say never just because, you know, I think I know better than that. But we'll see who's right, you know, and who knows, it may not even happen in this lifetime.
So many things would have to happen. That I believe it becomes, and I recognize how dangerous the word believe is, that I believe it becomes effectively nil. Among other things, the cable would have to go away, and then food would have to become scarce, And even then, as I discussed with David on the program on Friday, it becomes matters of only isolated pockets. This country is geographically too large for revolution. If 200 years down the road it breaks up and balkanizes into a series of smaller states, that is far more likely than out-and-out revolution with a wholesale change, because revolution means an outright change of government.
Well, I'm just saying social unrest. I'm saying, 2 million people in D.C. that just finally people say we've had enough and, you know, we're not going anywhere until this thing's changed one way or the other. And, you know, it's funny you should say that. You know, cable goes away and food goes away. Well, what do you think's happened to the 99ers? You know, what do you think has happened to a lot of us that just can't seem to find a job?
I understand but right now, well, look at the income inequity numbers that we were talking about. I was talking about with Sandra a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
But it is not happening on a scale sufficient to make the rest of the nation sit up and take notice. Look at the horror we caused in Iraq and Afghanistan and are still causing. Look at the a million civilians killed. And still only a relative few stood up and said anything about it. And they protested in Washington, D.C. on Saturday and were gone by Sunday. Because they had to get back to work.
Yeah.
Because they had to get back to scrambling to make the credit card payment and the mortgage payment and the insurance payment and the truck needed tires. And it's a form of economic slavery, Ike.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm living it. And I also know that, there's not a whole lot of people out here that can picture themselves living in a car and eating in a soup kitchen or living under a bridge. I understand that. You know, they're part of that crowd that traded down for dollars and cable TV. They're part of the crowd that doesn't understand freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. They don't remember any of that. They don't know what it means. They've never had to deal with it. And I think it would be a great eye-opener for a lot of people out there if they did have to deal with it.
Up until the last few years, every economic policy of the United States government has been geared toward making sure that there is never another Great Depression. Because the Great Depression was the closest we ever came to some sort of tectonic shift in government, and it was only by the institution of the beginnings of the social safety net that disaster was avoided.
Right.
And what you had under the Bush administration for 8 years was a callous disregard for all of that and a determination that, you remember when George W. Bush said, who cares what history will think? We'll all be dead.
Right. And who cares what anybody thinks, because by the time after we get done doing something, we're already on to the next thing, and you're still arguing about what we've already done. But, I still got faith in the country. I still got a faith that, you know, there'll be a day of reckoning. I just don't know when, but it will come.
And I feel kind of bad when I say that I would like to see, I would like to see the Saudi dictatorship, the oligarchic and monarchic though it be, overturned, and it wouldn't grieve me a bit. If they went all French Revolution on the Royal House of Ibn Saud. I feel bad about that because I understand, I have a gut level understanding of what the word revolution means. And by the time you get to the point that you're deposing monarchs, like the Saudi royal family, there has already been massive blood in the streets, and it is the blood of poor people, and it is the blood of the middle class. And it is the blood of innocence. And anybody who wants revolution in this country, by definition, wants that blood in the streets. And I don't.
Well, I don't either, but at the same time, you know, I still say that there hasn't been any real significant change in the world that hasn't happened without the spillage of it and without turmoil and social upheaval. You know, that's how we were born in this country. That's how most countries were born. You know, it's a bloody battle all the way down the line, and I hate to see it, but, you know, if that's what it takes to get hold of the Koch brothers and Richard Manscape and the rest of these bozos, well, then so be it.
I would not sacrifice one 15-year-old kid for every Koch brother, for every right-wing the thug in this country. I would not sacrifice the life of one child.
No, I'm just saying, you know, there is a segment of society out here that doesn't look at death the same way that most people do. I happen to be one of them. I neither fear it, even though I have no idea what's on the other side, if there is another side, and it just doesn't hold no value, no fear factor for me.
It's not about whether I'm afraid of death, Ike. It's about the fact that I don't have the right to demand that a kid die for some political aim. You know, I believe and I espouse, and I will, till my last dying breath, I hope, nonviolence. Nonviolence as practiced by King, nonviolence as practiced by Gandhi, nonviolence as practiced by Jesus Christ.
Sure, and in each of those cases, people died.
Yeah, they did.
Okay. No, there were plenty of innocents that got killed in those skirmishes.
Yeah, that were killed by the other side.
Correct. And that's what I'm saying. I'm not one of these turn-your-cheek, you know, the hell of them. They've had all the good times and all the power and all the glory and all the little stuff that they've enjoyed. You know, there has come the time. You're going to have to pay for it.
I will not, Ike. I will not advocate violence on this program. I will not wish for it.
I'm not advocating. Look, I'll put it to you this way. It's been demonstrated more than once in this country in particular. Well, we pulled together to have a peaceful demonstration. The FBI and other agencies stick rubber razors in the crowd. The next thing you know, the thing explodes, and all of a sudden, we're a bunch of violent thugs. And we had nothing to do with it.
Believe me, I know that history. I know that history very well, coming from where I do. Look at what happened when the miners struggling for some decent living and working conditions in this country, in this state,
exactly,
finally resorted to violence. They were crushed like bugs, and they did not have a prayer. And the labor movement died stone dead in Appalachia until the passage of the National Labor Relations Act. That was done without, you know, nobody got shot in Congress passing that. But the minute that an oppressed minority resorts to gunfire, game on, game over.
There's another incident out in the coal mines in Colorado that almost got Rockefeller in his head. He changed his tune. He's saying that with the rouge in Detroit. Ford changed his mind in a real quick hurry, too, because public opinion, when they saw that, the same way with the convention in 68 at Kent State, and all these things had a trigger, and that's what pushed us to where we got to. You know, I mean, look, I'm not advocating it either. I'm just saying you got to take reality for what it is. And you can't sit here and yell upon platitudes upon these people. You can only beg them for so long. There's an old saying out there, labor will only ask for what it wants for so long before it'll stand up and take it. And I think at this point, to tell you the truth, I'd like to see all the garbage men sit down. I'd like to see all the sanitation workers sit down. I'd like to see a whole bunch of people sit down just to put the point across that, you know what? You're all high and mighty. You got all your money. You got your big fancy house, your big fancy car, all this groovy stuff. Well, you know what? You ain't nothing without us. Nothing. You have nothing worth value. You think you do, but you don't. And, you know, that's where this is in Egypt. The young people over there are tired of being poor. They're tired of being tortured. They're tired of being everything, all the injustices that have been done to them. But what it really comes down to is this, and I'll agree with, I've heard this before, and I do believe it came from, I don't know, I want to say George Bush. I might be wrong. But look, as far as I know, anywhere on this planet, there's certain standards that people want. They want a place to live. They want enough food in their fridge. They want a decent paying job or a decent way of life. And that's all they want. That's all they're ever asking for. They're not asking for a $2 million house. They're not asking for this, that, and the other thing. They just want to live, let live, and have their little piece of life and be done with it. But we can't even get that. And if it gets down any lower than that, that's when everything's going to boil. And that's where I think, really, to be honest with you, when you look at what we're living in now, the oligarchs and the corporatocracy that we're living in, the Plutonomy, to coin the word from Goldman Sachs, you know, there's more than a few of us out here that are saying, you know what, we're just looking at our watch going, you know what, this is coming any time now. It is coming. And, you know, I can't say to you that it's going to be violent, nonviolent. I don't know what form it'll take. But I do know that, you know, the Tea Party's a damn good sensitive of it. Even though they don't understand they're being manipulated, even though they don't understand a lot of the things that they're doing are playing right into the hands of the people that fund them, but it's a pure demonstration of frustration. That's all it is. And once the populace becomes super frustrated like that, you know, just like in Men in Black, we're just dumb, scared animals, and we'll riot. I mean, that's what will happen. It happens all the time. You know, in different societies and what have you. But I got two things for you. One, best bumper sticker you'll ever see. A working man that votes for a Republican is like a chicken that votes for Colonel Sanders. Two, this is mine. The people are interested in health care. The Republicans are interested in welfare. That's what they want. They want to take care of this and keep propping up the system. And I'll tell you right now, I'm just waiting for it because I do believe.
Well, you can distill that second one down to the ultimate bumper sticker that we've sort of devised here over the last couple of months. They want it all. They want it all. The chicken, Colonel Sanders chicken. That you know where that came from?
Mm-mm, I just saw it on a bumper sticker.
That line was first enunciated by the father of J.C. Watts. Do you remember J.C. Watts?
Oh, really?
He was a congressman from Oklahoma, a disgusting right winger. And somebody asked his daddy, who was a preacher, said, "Will you vote for your son?" He said, "My son's a Republican. Me voting for my son would be like the chicken voting for Colonel Sanders." Ike, you take care and have a good night.
All right, brother, you too.
Bye now. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program. Okie dokie. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey,
Susan.
You want to know what's really appalling about that bill about rape?
What's that?
These guys have daughters.
Yeah, they do. But see, they have, they're good, upstanding, fine, fundamentalist Christians, and they've got daughters that they've raised that way. So they ain't never going to do nothing nasty that would get them.
And somebody can slip them a roofie just as easily as anybody else.
The right wingers generally have enough money, to go out of state or out of country and have that done quietly.
That's the kicker.
When we talk about abortion laws and access to abortion in the United States, what we're essentially talking about is access to abortions for people who cannot afford to pay for their own.
Here's what's going to happen. I'm old enough to remember when abortion was illegal. And if you think abortion stopped, you're dreaming. They didn't. The only difference was the girls from the upper middle classes, like Senator Boehner's daughters, and he does have them, they got a case of romantic fever and were taken to Europe where they had the procedure done, and then they were taken back home and went back to school. The girls from the...
It's kind of like Ayn Rand taking Social Security. It's an act of abject and unvarnished hypocrisy.
Right, and the girls from the lower middle class, they got to go to a back alley butcher who didn't bother to use anesthetic, let alone sterilize his instruments, and they got to scream a lot, and then they got to get infected, assuming they didn't die on the table.
Yeah. And I was in the store yesterday, I think it was. And several times in the store, I passed by this couple. They were obviously about my age. And they were pushing a grocery cart with an infant carrier in it and a newborn. And walking along beside them was a little girl. If she was 18, I'm the Jolly Green Giant.
Mm-hmm.
if she was 16, I'm the little green sprout.
Yeah.
And I just looked and said to myself, dear God, I know that that little girl didn't have any choice in the matter. She came home and said, well, no, she didn't come home and say, you know, her period didn't arrive on time. And she said, Mama, and Mama went to the drugstore and maybe bought a pregnancy test and said, well, you're pregnant, pumpkin. And there was never any discussion about any rights or any options that that child had. And so there goes brand new granny and granddad rolling through the aisles of the grocery store with a child that they, as sure as God made little green apples, are going to raise.
Assuming, of course,
that they're able and live long enough to do it.
Yeah, assuming, of course, that what they didn't do was say, okay, and this has happened quite frequently, you're not pregnant. I don't care if your belly is getting big, you're not pregnant. I'm pregnant.
Oh, yeah, where the mama says, yeah. You know, but I don't think that happens as much anymore, at least not...
No, not as much anymore.
Not here where I live, because there are so many... but it was astonishing to me when Margie started ninth grade, and that was 2 years ago. When she started ninth grade, there were two or three or four little girls that we'd seen grow up with her. Oh, she's pregnant. Oh, she's pregnant. Oh, she's pregnant. You know, not only is there no discussion of choice.
You know what I did when...
There's no meaningful education about contraception.
You know what I did when my daughter started high school?
What?
Well, I sat her down and I had the talk with her and then I informed her, let you and I go down to the doctor and I will, we'll get you birth control pills.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I think you're sexually active. I just want you to have them just in case.
Yeah, right.
Just in case.
And, you know, that was wise.
That way, you know, you're not going to get caught. I would much rather have somebody in the neighborhood think, oh, you're treating your daughter like a slut, than have my daughter have her life ruined by having a baby too soon. Especially since she never wanted children. She never did have children.
And that was
her
choice. But you see, in fundamentalist world, it's not her choice, because her reproductive organs belong to Jeebus and God. You got to remember, their story begins with God raping a teenage virgin. That's how their myth begins. Go right ahead.
Tommy and Susie, cover your ears, please.
No, let's watch the fun words, but yeah, go ahead.
In regard to the reproductive organs belonging to Jeebus? Well, Jeebus, I held myself back. He can put it where the sun don't shine.
And more importantly, you know, abortifacients were known in that time period. There were a number of them.
Just ask any witch.
Well, the ones that they weren't suffering not to live also in that time period.
Well,
remember,
yes,
that's in their holy book, too, Suffer Not a Witch to Live.
Tell me about it. I've got that hanging over my head, too.
But that stuff was all known about. Homosexuality was known about. And yet, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, didn't say it. He had plenty of an opportunity to say anything he wanted to say, and there was somebody sitting there going, what did he say again? Oh, yeah.
No, so why did he single us witches out instead of the homosexuals? That's what I want.
Well, no, I don't think I don't think he suffered. I don't think he singled out the witches. That's Old Testament stuff. That suffer not a witch to live business.
Yeah, somebody sure singled us out. You know, that's about as blunt as a commandment. You know, blunt as a set of instructions as I can think of.
Yeah, and Marty asking a question. Didn't George W. Bush's HHS make a determination that each woman or girl of childbearing age be considered pre-pregnant?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dear God.
Pre-pregnant. God, I just knew. Oh, God, that sounds just... Oh, brings back nightmares.
Yeah, the chat room telling me that... the chat room's telling me that suffer not a witch to live comes from the Old Testament.
Yeah. What I want to know is... dear old Boner and, you know, the Orange Overlord and Eddie Munster and company. I can't avoid calling him that, you know. He looks so much like Eddie Munster. They seemed bound and determined to take this country back to the Victorian era. Does that mean we have to start shelving books by authors? You know, the female authors have to be on one shelf and the male authors have to be on another shelf?
You don't even put it out into the stream of consciousness, because somewhere there's some right-wing fundamentalist that says, "Oh, yes."
These people are just strange.
Well, and don't forget sick. But their sickness, they're not just randomly sick, Susan. They are sick with a purpose. And their purpose is to create a patriarchal, male-dominated state in which they and their tiny, tiny penises are never again threatened by femaleness.
And they are very tiny, tiny penises. You can tell that just by the way they act.
Yeah, somebody who's comfortable in their sexuality is not threatened.
Yeah, certainly not by a woman who decides not to have children or decides to be a woman on her own and who thinks for herself and her sexuality.
Bingo. Susan, have yourself a good night, dear.
Give Agnes my love and have fun.
Gonna try. We're sitting here vibrating a little more every day in anticipation of getting on the boat.
On the boat. Have fun.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Moving on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, Andy.
Hey, Andy.
How you doing?
I'm good. You?
All right. I was on the phone earlier, and I was so enthralled by Ike's conversation when you got off the phone with him, I grabbed my phone and I hit the wrong button.
Oh, that'll happen.
So I went away.
Ah, you were the person who wasn't there.
Yeah.
Oh, darn, okay.
That was a good conversation you had.
Well, thank you.
The one reason I called, one thing I wanted to talk about, you ever heard of a company called Evergreen Solar?
Offhand, no.
It was in the news, and I know it was played up by CNBC, because this is an interesting case. The New York Times, too, on a Saturday, the business section on January 15th, and I happened to clip the article. This company, Evergreen Solar, got all kind of tax credits from the state of Massachusetts. I think they got about $43 million. To get up and going. They're the third largest solar panel maker in the United States. And they just got off the ground in 2008. And they, like I said, they got $43 million in the state of Massachusetts, right?
Okay.
Hired 800 workers. Now, here's your green technology. Here's a perfect, great company, third in the industry in the United States. And they just announced they're moving the whole plant to China and going to lay off every worker.
Son of a...
Isn't this insanity? How the hell are we supposed to compete when this is exactly the industry that's supposed to get us, you know, back into creating jobs?
But isn't that the isn't that kind of the pre-established model? Get on your feet and get out of town. I mean, isn't that the way this Dodge was designed?
It's insane because they only got up in manufacturing in 2008, and now they're going to lay off all these employees. It's just unconscionable. With this guy, the guy who's the CEO is named Michael L. Hillow, and the reason he's going is because China gave him more tax credits and cheaper loans, down to 4.8%. Actually, they indicate in the article. The banks in the United States would only give him double-digit funding costs. That means somewhere, you know, above 10%. Now, why the hell is that? The banks are borrowing from the Fed funds window at almost nothing. Almost nothing. And they can't give this guy a decent loan to keep his business going in the United States? And matter of fact, the plant he's moving to, I forget, Guangdong, China, or something like that, is a place they actually used to execute dissidents. And they refurbished it for his, you know, to add more insult to injury. But I just thought this is an amazing... Here, we're doing everything right. These guys are getting huge tax credits, and still this guy named Michael L. Hill, the CEO, decides he can't make this thing work in the United States. The deal is just too good in China, and he's got to leave. I mean, if this company can't make it here, how can any company? I mean, why don't we just throw the dice in and go home? I mean, what do we do? If you got, and this guy's a pig. I mean, a complete, and this is 2008, only 2-3 years ago, where he got only $43 million from the state of Massachusetts, and he's just throwing it all away. I mean, God, well, this is sick. And here you get this guy, Jeff Immelt, who's given the job to create jobs, and he closed 29 plants within 2 years in the United States. 29 plants. And Jack Welch, of course, was the guy who invented outsourcing from GE.
29?
29. That's what it said in the paper. 29 plants of GE were closed in the United States. Yeah, they might not have been big because they're spread all over the place. You know, GE has plants all over the place and all kind of different subsidiaries.
Sure.
But this is insane. And another thing, in another article I saw, you know who Christine Romer is?
Oh, yes.
Right, she just lost her job. She's going back to Berkeley. I guess she was on the Council of Economic Advisors.
Right.
In the New York Times, I read an article about her, that I guess after Obama's speech came out. And she indicated that when Obama started talking about the trade deal with South Korea, she couldn't help but start jumping up and down. She thought it was the greatest thing. She'd been working for, I guess, years to get Obama to do these free trade deals. And the South Korea deal was so great. Jesus, this is the type of people he surrounded him with. She just couldn't wait to see this free trade deal. You know, supposedly going to create 70,000 jobs in the U.S. And Obama said unions were supporting this. I want to know what union would support a free trade deal, especially with South Korea. I want him to name the union. That's baloney.
Not much of a union, huh?
Yeah. And also in this same article...
Oh, wait. Was it the UAW that supported it?
I don't know. I've never heard it. Actually, he said that unions were supporting this deal, but I've never heard of anybody come forward.
I think I read somewhere, and I'm willing to be corrected, but I think I read somewhere that the UAW was approving of it. Because they thought they were going to get something by the way of parts suppliers or something. You know, one of those deals with the devil.
Right.
It's... That's a story I'm... Damn.
I just think the free trade deals are such baloney. They had no free trade. I mean, can't we just look at the numbers? We have a 9.4% unemployment rate compared to 7% in Germany.
Right.
Well, there's no reason that we should have an unemployment rate higher than Germany. And we're supposed to be a much less regulated economy and much more open. And, you know, the prize of neoliberalism, it's not working.
And, no, it's not working, and it's not working for a number of reasons. But remember, you know, Germany has an actual manufacturing policy that says that German goods have to have such and such a percentage of German content.
Right.
We don't do that.
And their boards of directors on all German companies have to be, half of the board has to be from the employee base, employee represented. So, of course, if you've got a board of directors that's got half of it employees, their policies are going to be to maintain jobs, period.
Yeah.
Period.
And you're going to have a healthy economy, or a healthier one.
Healthier people, that's for sure, and not as much of a stratified...
But the other thing I was going to point out, Andy, is look at China. This is a function of the fact also, and I'm not making excuses, but China wants a green economy. China is desperately trying to build its green economy because, among other things, the Chinese government knows what it is doing to its people by burning coal the way they are burning it. They're digging it for all they're worth. They're buying almost every scrap that comes out of Australia. They're buying American coal for all they're worth. And they know that it's unsustainable, and it is something that cannot last, and they must, in order not to compete, not to surpass, but merely to survive, they must build a green economy. And they have the ability to comprehend that, whereas that is not comprehended here. It's not comprehended the Obama administration talks about it some, but let me just give you an example, if I may. I walked into the little grocery store at the top of the hill last night. I had to get some food for the puppies. And the guy who runs the place, who has run that store for 30 years, looks at me and says, "How you liking your electric bill?" I said, "I'm not." Because, and I mean, we're not profligate users of electricity. I'm the turn the lights off guy. Everything except the computer that runs the stream gets shut down every night. We unplug things that charge things so that there's no phantom usage. We augment our heat with little propane cylinder, heaters. Our power bill for this month is $475.
Wow.
And that's not a function of profligate usage. That is a function of cheap coal. And so the guy who runs the store said to me, you know, he said, I know people live out the road from you who still heat with oil, and they're spending $1,200 a month. And again, not running the heat, at 95 degrees. It's a function of cost. And in that moment, Andy, I realized that while, you know, every time Barack Obama talks about a green economy, he talks about, you know, wanting to yada yada manufacturing, blah, 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 blah. But what we actually desperately need is the ability for individual homes to go to solar and wind, especially in a rural place like West Virginia, where a lot of land is mountainside. And you could put a solar panel on it, or a windmill, a wind turbine, and generate a boatload of electricity that way. But we don't have a governmental policy that says that's a good thing for homeowners to be able to do.
Right.
I've got this running dream of someday being able to open and close every program here by saying no mountains were harmed in the making of this radio program. By having wind and solar and getting the horn completely off the grid.
Right.
But there's no policy for it. There's no, you know, the industry itself, like this Evergreen outfit. They went to China because China was willing to make it worth their while. They undercut us, and they did it deliberately.
Right.
And we sit around going, well, why'd they do that? Well, because Chinese people can make solar panels and American people can make solar panels. But there is no governmental determination that we want American people to make solar panels. And then, of course, Greg LeRoy with his book a few years ago called, The Great Job Scam, The Great American Job Scam. You know, he laid out chapter and verse, word by word, the filthy little race to the bottom that all of these tax credit dodges create. And, you know, we're reaping the cost of it. Because all of that stuff went into vogue, what, 10, 15, 20 years ago? And those tax credits are going to begin to run out, and they're going to abandon the plants, and they're going to do what Evergreen did and go to China.
Right. Well, it goes along with the grip that the fossil fuel industry has over Congress, and they just will not do that because the Petroleum Institute will come down like a ton of bricks on Congress, and these guys are the Republicans are all bought and paid for anyway by fossil fuel, so you never get it. And when Jimmy Carter was in office, you know, when we had the great energy crisis, he did put policies in place, and he did knock off 80% of our dependence on Persian Gulf oil. He knocked that down in 5 to 7 years. We were taking 80% off of that. And you know it can be done, and like you said, all you have to do is incentivize individuals to take their individual homes and make them completely energy independent, and they've done it in Germany, and they've done it in Denmark. And I believe in Denmark, 50% of all their energy, if not more, comes from either wind or solar, period. And you know what? I hear complete, for lack of better words, well, let's call him what he is. I'll bring up Bob Brinker, the fascist. This guy is a fascist. He is a total fascist.
Yes.
It goes cross-country on the airwaves, and at a time his show doesn't go by where he takes a crack at solar and wind power for the fossil fuel pigs. This guy Brinker is a son of a bee. And again, I heard him yesterday saying how some woman called up saying that, you know, really we should be moving to wind and solar, saying exactly the same thing you said. We should be doing individual homes and it should be incentivized. And this pig comes out and he said, oh, but dearie, it's just not going to cut it. Wind and solar just don't have enough oomph. It's only like 1/10 of all energy produced and it's just not going to get there. Well, God damn, the Danes have done it. The Germans have done it. What do you mean? This is total baloney. It can be done.
And to a certain extent, it is. It's even being done here.
This is what the world, this is what the corporate media, which I'll bring up, Mike Papantonio brought up a statement the other day that says it all. Every day, 2,500 hours of right-wing radio is pummeled into the Neanderthal brains of Americans, 2,500 hours, compared to 250 hours of more progressive radio.
I actually think that that's a more generous estimate than is actually factual, because right. the study that I've relied on for the last couple of years, 1,000 hours of right-wing hate for every hour of liberal.
Wow. I wouldn't doubt it.
And honestly, you know, what I don't understand, the more economic purists, you know, the libertarian types of the right wing, who are so, you know, oh, it's all about capitalism and entrepreneurship. Well, it's all about that until it's about building an industry that makes the wind turbines and solar panels, and then it's, well, you know, that's Satanism. And it drives me crazy. You know, some of it's educational, Andy, because, you know, if you really were disgusted at a $475 power bill, and you weren't me, and you could go to the bank and take out a home loan, you know, you could solar and wind your house up for $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 tops, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you could cut that $475 power bill down to a more manageable, you know, $75 or $100?
Right.
Why in God's name wouldn't you do that?
Absolutely.
And, you know, home mortgage interest is still deductible, isn't it?
Yes, indeed.
You know, where's the movement encouraging people, you know, no, not to go out and get a second mortgage from Fannie Mae, but where's the movement to get people to go out and get a mortgage, a second mortgage to, or you know, maybe just a home loan on a paid-off house to help you put money back in your pocket? And then there's another thing that ties in with this, and that is the Dodge. If you think about doing home electricity generation, they'll say, well, you know what? Any excess electricity you produce, power company has to pay you for. That's a lie. Because you can get to zero with them, but you can never get to getting a check from them. They do not have to pay you. All they do is credit your account. And when you get to zero, you're stuck at zero. And I think that's the case in most of the states in the country. Because, once again, most of the states in the country, it's like insurance and many other, you know, mandatory auto insurance, that kind of stuff. It is all managed at a state level.
Right. Well, the problem we have when you have a Quisling in the White House, a guy that keeps singing the praises of clean coal, the most ridiculous big lie there is out there, when you have him keep on restating Republican talking points and singing the praises of Ronald Reagan, the guy who tore down the solar panels in the White House and brought us back to being totally dependent on Persian Gulf oil and Saudi oil, then we're going to get nothing, because this guy in the White House is just not going to do it, because he's too enamored with himself and him getting elected the next time that he's going to bend over to big coal and big oil and the fossil fuel. And it ain't going to happen with this, you know, this fraud that's inhabiting the White House right now. He's better than a Republican fraud. I mean, no question about it, but the man is a fraud. And he will say anything, he will do anything to get elected. And that means not irritating big energy, fossil fuel, oil, natural gas, and
the utilities that are attached to them.
Right. And the utility pigs that do not want to get us off of it, because everything here runs on greed and profits, and they don't care. And the only way they're going to care is if if the government comes down hard on them and regulates them and makes them do the things that have to be done. But we don't have, all we have is a coward. We have a yellow belly in the White House that does not have the gonads to make it happen like a Roosevelt would. He's not going to take on the big power interest because he doesn't have it in him.
And he doesn't have a Congress.
Right.
And that's the most disgusting factor. When he did have a Congress, it still didn't happen.
Right. He wasn't in him when he could have pulled it off. Not in him. He don't have the guts for it. There's no guts. There's no badge of courage in the White House. That's not there. It is not there to do the things that the people really need done. Badge of courage is not there. This guy is not going to carry the flag. He's not going to put his life up there to be used as a pinata, which a real leader would do, because he knows it's the right thing to do. But this guy doesn't do the right thing. He just does what's going to get him elected. And that's not the right thing.
It's hard to argue with that, because I think it's factually correct.
Yep. All right.
Well, Andy, I appreciate it. I'd like to do a little problem-solving work. You know, how do we craft... How do we craft legislation to create, maybe subsidized loans for wind and solar?
Should be easy. The model's there. You would hope some state, like a Vermont, a real progressive legislature could come up with something. I believe there's some things in California here. I don't own a home, but I believe there's some incentives to do some things with the... I believe New Jersey even has some things on the books statewide to do some things with your home to solarize it, to get some tax breaks. But you'd think it would happen at the state level with some progressive legislature. But the model's there. It's been done in Europe.
Yeah.
It has been done. But that took Greens. You know, that was Greens in the legislature.
Yeah, the real kind.
Germany.
The real kind.
Real Greens. Real, yeah, exactly. Those are the people that pushed that. And they made it happen.
Yeah, because and to get to the political underpinnings of that, I guess that's my word tonight, underpinnings. What happened there is they got serious about it. They ran people for legislator. They ran people, for the legislature, for the city council, for mayor, and they built their power base from the bottom up, like it has to happen if it's going to work.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Instead of running somebody for president every 4 years. Which is kind of, that's why it really frustrates me. I'd like to see it built.
Right, same thing here. You'd like to see the infrastructure at the grassroots get built and then slowly work your way up.
But I have a feeling that countries like Germany and Denmark don't face the uphill money battle. It's not the Joker in the deck of American politics. The whole deck is jokers in American politics. And they've all got that little mud dollar symbol in the corner.
Right. Ours is geared to a two-party system, and in which does a great job of keeping out any third party, no matter what it is, be it libertarian, be it far-right teabagger, or be it a green or real progressive candidates. All the little parties get knocked out because we don't have a parliamentary system, and then you got the double dose of a hit where it's unlimited money from the Chamber of Commerce to buy off politicians and bribe them, and corporations, companies wouldn't do advertising if it didn't work, and Hermann Göring and Goebbels wouldn't have done their propaganda stuff and owned the airwaves in Germany if they didn't know it would work. But propaganda does work. That's why you do it. Advertising does work. Like you were just talking about the food industry and the garbage commercials they got going on with soda pop, which is probably the biggest cause of problems in the United States as far as diabetes and weight gains there is, the amount of sugar that you find in soda pop. And God,
well, it's the high fructose corn syrup.
Right, and that too.
I mean, if you consider all the sugar in carbonated beverages, the country was not burning up with diabetes in the 70s or the 80s. It only starts with the introduction of high fructose corn syrup, because for all I've gotten to where I write these emails, Andy, when I find something that I'm especially fond of that turns out to have high fructose corn syrup in it. And I got one the other day, and it said, Dear Bob, high fructose corn syrup is just like sugar. And I wrote back and said, well, thanks for responding, but you, whoever you are that's writing these things, need to at least know that your employer is lying to you. It isn't. And sat there and gave, chapter and verse.
Right.
But all these things happen because corporate America wants them to happen, Andy.
Right.
These are not organic processes that just evolved over time.
Right. Well, they're making money. They're making money. And like having aspartame sweetener in diet drinks as well, and using that from Cyril, Rumsfeld's old company, that's also a very toxic drug. Why is that found in Diet Cokes? I mean, it's basically formaldehyde when it gets heated up, and it could be very, very toxic. And that's a joke, too, which FDA should have never let that in drinks. And I know one of your listeners has diabetes. I forget the individual's name, but I know he's constantly in a lot of pain. And myself, too, I'm diabetic as well, and it was just diagnosed 3 years ago. And believe me, it is not fun. It is not fun at all. It is one of the toughest battles I'm having in my life, trying to get my numbers down. And it is awful. And I have nobody else in my family that has the condition I have. You know, a lot of us probably do, because politically I get so upset. But diabetes is nothing to laugh at and is not
fun. Well, it scares the daylights out of me because I'm probably on the road to it.
Yeah, it's not fun at all.
What we're finding out of this last illness that I had is that, you know, it was about 3 years ago, I guess, that we found out that I have a birth defect that causes all sum total and effect of it is that all of my innards are sort of in a big wad over on one side of my body instead of being sort of scattered through your abdomen like they ought to be. And that causes a number of different things, one of which is a great deal of aggravation to my pancreas.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the pancreas is comprised of two different systems, the endocrine and the exocrine system. And the endocrine is the diabetes part of it when it stops producing insulin. The exocrine is the part of it that secretes these enzymes that break down carbohydrates and proteins and starches and fats and stuff. And that's the part that I have a problem with. But it also causes my sugar numbers, my blood glucose numbers, serum glucose numbers, to behave squirrely.
Right.
And I watched my father deal with it. And I don't look forward to it. I don't look forward to it at all. You know, the sweat and you know, going back to when I was a little kid, I've been hypoglycemic all my life. And it's a hell of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And to see that happen to my dad after he would take his insulin. And, you know, then he had to eat in 30 minutes or all hell broke loose.
Wow.
And the sweat would come out and he'd start shaking and getting sleepy. And it's like, oh, shit.
Mm.
I'm not looking forward to it.
Right. Well, it all boils down to the amount of money in politics, and the Citizens United didn't help. And, as a matter of fact, I was at a Move to Amend demonstration last week that we had here in Redwood City at the town hall. We had like 30 people out there and had some marches going around the little town square that we had, you know, to try to get them to do a constitutional amendment to make sure that corporations aren't considered as people, so we get that Citizens United thing under control. But the money in our political system, you know, is beyond compare of what you would find in Europe or other countries where they have a lot more regulations on campaign finance that we don't have here, and that Citizens United is just killing us.
And the more I think about it, Andy, the more I'm convinced that every problem in America could probably be solved by beginning with meaningful campaign finance reform.
Right.
You know, not that McCain-Feingold foolishness.
Right. And look at this last campaign cycle. What happened at the state legislative level and also the governorship level? The Republicans had unprecedented wins. And how could that be justified after they just ran the country into the toilet 3 years ago? For God's sakes, they ran it into the damn toilet completely. And here they are back again in a vengeance. Unbelievable.
Yeah, talking about you, talking about our loved ones, our elderly, laying around in the social hammock. You know, if I can't imagine in a right and proper world, Wisconsinites would be around Paul Ryan's office 24/7, demanding that he step down for that comment. But of course, they're not.
Ryan, it's just to watch him in action. The thing, the straight face, and the just the diatribe that he puts on of just complete, I don't know, non-caring, absolutely no empathy for his fellow man at all. Everybody to him seems to be not deserving of anything. And God damn, if our older generation, the people that fought World War II and really worked hard all their lives and never really made it enough to even put away to have a decent retirement and as little as Social Security gives, because it doesn't give very much. Believe me, it does not. And watch my mother just going through her savings. And you talk about heating bills, too. She's in the Northeast. She has superheating bills as well. It's just eating away. And so if she didn't have Social Security, matter of fact, there was a statistic that came out the other day that 68% of all retirees in America now, 68% of their income is coming from Social Security. 68% of all retirement for people today is coming from Social Security. For the vast amount of people, I mean, this program is the greatest thing to ever happen for America, because they need it. People need it. They just didn't make enough. This has been going on, as you've indicated, you know, since the Reagan era, where the wages have just been subdued for working people. And this is the only thing they have, especially without defined benefit plans, because the 401ks don't cut it. This is all people have. And to have Paul Ryan, that freaking, the guy is just a devil. He's just like darkness incarnate. To come out and he thinks everybody is getting something for free. Nobody works. He was the only one who bootstrapped himself, and he did it on Social Security. God damn, the guy is a sicko.
Yeah.
He is really a sick individual. That's the only thing I can think of. He is sick.
Well, that's the elitism of the right wing. They think that if they don't have it, if somebody else has it and they don't, that they've been cheated out of it somehow. It's a really, really sick sort of sociopathy, I think.
Yeah. But again, it all comes back to campaigns.
You clean that up and you can start cleaning up everything else, because suddenly the Koch brothers, the devil take them, can't simply buy a Congress.
Right. And they have, this last cycle shows, the Koch brothers and the Chamber of Commerce are doing us in.
Yeah. And if we thought 2010 was fun from a Citizens United standpoint, we ain't seen nothing, Andy. We ain't seen nothing.
Right.
Till we get a good gander at the money Citizens United cash will pump into the 2012 cycle.
Right. It won't be pretty. It's not going to be fun to look forward to.
No. And I think, you know, that's part of the reason that I take the approach on this program that I do, that, you know, we have to form little communities. We have to form a network of people we know that we can depend upon to, you know, give us good counsel and good cheer, and where we can thrash out ideas and come to some answers, because eventually this balloon is going to burst.
I was just thinking the same thing. When are we, you know, and you had this with Ike, and you're going back and forth with this. Well, when the tipping point has got to come soon, because the disparity between the haves and have-nots is just getting so bad here. And it is the same as Egypt already, and they tipped. Gee, when are we going to tip?
But they don't have the cable
when the cable plug gets pulled. But it's just incredible.
You know, I had a story yesterday. I saw it come across about a county in North Dakota, and it turns out to be happening in Michigan as well, and probably other states.
And North Dakota is supposed to be one of the most well-off states, generally speaking.
Right, but this particular county had reached the point where it is no longer able to service its paved roads. And so instead of paving roads, they've got them a grinding machine. And it goes down the paved roads, and the grinding machine grinds the asphalt into gravel.
So they're putting it back the way it was. They're regressing.
Yeah, and there was a quote from some guy in the story who said, well, a few years ago, you know, we had some good tax revenues, and we thought, you know, we was just going to help everybody out by paving all the roads and just make our, you know, be good for the neighbors. But then we found out we don't have the money anymore. Well, you know, BS. It's not you found out you didn't have it, the money anymore. The money was deliberately deleted. Because Wall Street banksters needed it worse.
That's the continual response you hear, that we don't have the money anymore.
Like, yesterday I left here, there was a pile of money 6 feet tall. I came in today, it was gone. Don't know where it went.
Yeah, you do have the money. The money's residing in some rich person's bank or some corporation's bank. And don't tell me we have corporations now at record annual profits ever in the history of the United States. The problem is we have a wealth distribution problem. The rich are not paying their fair share, and the corporations are not paying their fair share. The corporations used to pay 40% of all tax receipts. They're paying about 5% now. No matter what Bob Brinker goes telling the country, and the rich people, of course, used to be paying at a 91% tax rate. They're paying at a 35% tax rate. They are not paying their fair share. The middle and lower classes are paying much more of a percentage of tax receipts than they've ever paid, and owe that to Ronald Reagan, who doubled the payroll tax.
And yet, every time, somebody just noted this in the chat room, every time you turn around, they're going, American workers' productivity's never been higher.
Right. And Alan Blinder, who used to be an ex-Fed president, I heard him on a television show. They did a study, and they found out that corporations, on average, are paying only an 8% effective tax.
Yeah.
Their tax is supposed to be 35%, but his study showed only an 8% effective tax rate. So when this guy from North Dakota says the money isn't there, oh, it's definitely there. It's just not being taken.
It's just not where he thinks it is.
Yeah.
It's been taken away from where it needs to be.
Right.
But, why would America need paved roads, huh?
And we can continue down this path to be a third world nation, but what you get is, instead of having a country that has the number one education system in the world, you have a country that's somewhere in the back of the pack in education system.
Oh, yeah, wait till some non-union over-the-road truck driver tries to barrel down a gravel road at 80 miles an hour. That's going to be good.
Right. I mean, there's a price to pay. You don't want to have people paying taxes. Well, then your social system and your quality of life in your country is going to nosedive.
You know what I'd like to know? I'd like to know what the effective corporate tax rate is in Egypt.
Well, the problem is, too, they're very much a neoliberal economy because the United States corporations got in there. You know, Coca-Cola and the Lockheed Martins and whoever else are having a field day over there in their neoliberal economy. Because anytime you have a dictatorship and a tyrant, of course the corporations can run wild and wreak havoc. And that's what they're doing. I'll bet you they have a really low corporate tax rate.
I bet they do, too. And I'd like to connect that dot. Andy, it's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you very kindly. I'm glad you called back.
All right.
Take care
of yourself, Bob. I'm sorry about your electricity bill. That's insanity.
Well, but you know what? You didn't cause it, so don't apologize.
All righty.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's that cheap coal electricity. Coal keeps the lights on. Yeah, not so much. So it's time to get out of here. It is the last day of January. Have you noticed what I didn't mention tonight? I promised it, and I didn't, and I ain't a-gonna. Thank you for making that possible. Thanks to everybody who makes the show possible, you with your ideas, your emails, your phone calls, your chat room participation, everything. Thanks for telling folks about the horn. Thanks for spreading the word that there is a conversation that's been taking place for more than 5 years that every liberal, every progressive of good conscience is welcome to join in. We don't welcome right-wingers, no teabaggers, no Republicans, no. But everyone of good conscience who's a liberal or a progressive is welcome in this conversation. And thanks for spreading the word. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee. Thanks to Reverbo, and get to feeling better, brother. Thanks to our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne at osborneinc.com, OSBORNEINK.com. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, musician, man of many hats. Thanks. And thanks to Ben Birch, who since 2002, those really scary numbers Andy and I were talking about a minute ago, well, since 2002, Ben Birch has been making it possible at WhiteRoseSociety.org for those numbers to be at least where they are and not worse. WhiteRoseSociety.org saved liberal talk on the Internet. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. When you hear me talking about stuff like solar and wind, it's stuff that I've learned by the blessing of my association with the hard working, brave people of Coal River Mountain Watch. And always, 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 Gina, Judy. It's all for you. Hey, no Monday Night Football, so Rick Smith is next.